When my daughter Claire was little, I remember an afternoon that I was visiting with a friend, and Claire had come with me to my friend's home. And Claire, I don't remember the exact circumstance, but she wanted something, go home or food or whatever. And so she kept coming up to me, and I kept saying that parent thing, you know, we'll do that in 5 more minutes. And I must have repeated that phrase at least 4 times before Claire exploded and she said, your time is not my time. Your 5 minutes are different than my 5 minutes. And she, you know, she was exactly right, you know. My 5 minutes was actually like at least 20 minutes. But I got her point, you know, that she made, you know, time moves differently for different people depending on what's happening around you. Time's funny like that. You know, you experience those times where a day either flies by or it just sort of creeps along. It's the same 24 hours, right? But we experience it differently. So time and minutes, hours, they don't always flow the way that we expect them to. You know, especially like how in football, 2 football minutes are not 2 real-time minutes, right? They just stretch on and on. Time literally stands still. It goes backwards sometimes if they've got to add minutes onto the play clock, right? 2 football minutes really take, you know, 6, 8, 10 real world minutes. And I was thinking of all of this because 2 of our Advent readings this morning deal with this theme of time. They're a response, really, to this time period that we find ourselves in, this in-between time of when Jesus was born and lived, died, was resurrected, ascended into heaven, and we're waiting. We're in this in-between time for when Jesus will come back. And the first followers of Christ were trying to figure out, how do we live in this middle period of time that we don't even know how long it's going to be? The first followers, the first few generations, they thought that Jesus was going to return ASAP, right? But they kept waiting, right? The sun rose, they got married, they had children, they planted fields, they harvested them, they worshiped God, they read the Bible, they learned, and yet still no Jesus. No Jesus's return. It's like they expected Jesus's return to happen in, you know, real world minutes, and what they got was, you know, this time period of football minutes. Right? We're still waiting, right? The author of Matthew's gospel, this passage we heard today is his encouragement to his community during this waiting period. Now, it may not seem like a comforting passage, you know, the idea of, you know, there are 2 people and 1 gets taken and 1 gets left behind, that may not sound comforting to you, but these first followers of Christ heard this as good news. Right? Jesus essentially tells his followers, you know, look, one day God's kingdom will reign over all of the earth and not just kind of appear in our lives in these little dribs and drabs of the kingdom breaking in. But here's the thing. We don't know. We don't know when. You know, the angels who serve God, they don't know. I don't know. Only God knows. And the reason Jesus says this is he feels that it's more important for us to focus on what we're doing in this in-between time than to be worried about the end, right? And how that end will come. Jesus is more concerned with the actions that we do, that we're participating now in the kingdom life, and how we do that now, than what may happen at some future time. And, you know, just a little aside about the rapture, which, you know, this passage kind of makes me think of it, may make you think of it, you know, this one taken, one left behind idea. There's a whole book series on this, right? The left behind, I think they made it into a movie and maybe TV show. You know, there are Christians out there who hand you those little pamphlets, right? Trying to literally scare the hell out of you and get you ready, right? A lot of Christians read these passages, especially this one about the apocalypse, and they see it as, you know, good, God-fearing folk that will get lifted up into heaven and taken away from the rest of us sinners that are, you know, stuck here. But I don't think that's actually how the first followers heard this passage. I'm not going to go into all of the Greek, but the word that's used here for taken has many different meanings. And one of those meanings, one of the layers of those meanings, means to take away, but as you are stealing something, right? Or to take away as you take away a prisoner. And the word that's translated as left behind, most of the times, it's actually translated as forgiven. So what if the ones that are taken away are the ones not living the kingdom life? What if that one is snatched, is stolen away, sort of the same way that that Africans were carried away from the life that they were experiencing? And so what if the one left behind in the field is the one who gets to experience continued life because their sins, their debts are forgiven? You know, in Jesus' own example in this passage, the one he holds up as an example for us is Noah. Noah isn't taken away to be with God. Noah is left behind on earth to participate in the recreation of God's world. That's why it's important to do Bible study and to get back to the original language and to dig deeper into these wonderful texts. Okay, that's it. My rant's done. Back to the gospel. So in this gospel passage, Matthew records this story for his community because they had questions while they're living in this in-between time. You know, questions like, how do we live faithfully in a world that has seemingly gone crazy? You know, Rome not only occupied the land of God's chosen people, Rome not only crucified God's Messiah for being a rebellious protester, but Rome had come in and leveled God's holy temple. Matthew writes, after the temple's destruction, the Romans had just razed it to the ground as a way to suppress the religious faith, to suppress the expression of liberation that was at the hope of the heart of the Jewish people. So Matthew's community has this question, one that we still do. You know, how do you live when people around you are losing their civil rights? How do you live faithfully? How do you get through your days when those in authority are unjustly imprisoning people, killing people because of their race or religion, or their desire to have personal freedom and liberation and pursuit of a God-filled, sustenance-filled life? And these are the questions that Christ's followers have been asking for 2,000 years while we live in this in-between time. And who among us this morning hasn't watched the morning news or read a newspaper and wondered, in the midst of this gun violence and racial profiling and the refugee crisis at our border and the seemingly downward spiral of democracy around the world, we wonder, how can we possibly live faithfully to Jesus in this time? And there are two responses that we can make. The world gives us one way. We can go numb. We can ignore it. We can sleepwalk through our hours, buying happiness, with the latest tech gadget or designer clothes that we got for a real good steal a couple days ago on Black Friday. Okay. We can spend. Or we can gorge ourselves on fatty, sugary, processed food that tastes so good, but slowly kills us from the inside. We can binge watch entire TV series in a day or two, ignoring the spinning of the world outside the safety of our four walls. You can just snuggle into the warmth and false security of our beds, concerned only with the little corner of our existence that we find ourselves in. We can sleep. That's one response. Advent, though, gives us another response to this question of how do we live faithfully here and now while we wait. Advent tells us that we are to cast away the works of darkness and put on the armor of light. That's the way that Paul puts it in his letter to the Romans. Paul sees that they are struggling with this very question of how to live faithfully in a world that is always trying to draw us away from God, to get us to worship the many small gods that cry for our attention. Paul urges the Romans, he urges us to wake up, to do the gospel living now that you're supposed to do. Not focused on gratifying the quick desires of our hearts and bellies. No drunken, gluttonous parties, no binge-watching TV shows, no bitter, hostile hatred against others who disagree with us. Kingdom living means that we search out the lost and least. We feed the hungry, we clothe the naked, we love our enemies. These are not new lessons. This is the life that Jesus came into, that our Savior lived, the very reason that God comes to us in the flesh of a baby to show us the way to live a life fully awake. Advent challenges us to wake up from our slumbers. We can no longer afford to linger in the various distractions that keep us stumbling in the dark. We cannot continue to blame those who are different from us simply because it's easy. We cannot continue to ignore the suffering in our world or the suffering in our communities because it's too painful to watch. We cannot continue to indulge in our own selfishness simply because it feels good. The message of Advent is that with the coming of Christ, the day has dawned. And that means we have to throw off our blankets, get up out of bed, and walk out into this hurting world, bearing the light that Christ wants us to bring into the world through us.